Welcome to the Recovery Centered Podcast, the space for honest conversation about healing, hope, and the journey through mental health and addiction recovery. Each episode, we sit down with people making a difference, from therapists and researchers to change makers and to survivors. Now to explore what recovery really looks like in the world. This podcast is produced in collaboration with Beachway Therapy Center. Hey, welcome back to another podcast, Recovery Centered. I am your host, Tim Roberto. Today's guest is a person that I've known for a really long time. But, you know, in some of these things that you know for a really long time, sometimes they go in stages. And I feel like this is the best stage that we've had. We've been connecting on a more regular basis. Our guest today is Jessica Pond out of Boca Raton. Yeah, Boca.
Thank you.
LCSW.
That's right.
Phenomenal at what she does. And for anybody that just happens to be here and doesn't know what that is, that's a licensed clinical social worker. And how long has that been now?
15, almost 16 years.
And she looks like a kid, doesn't she? 15 years. Like, what did she do? Get it in high school or something? Advanced student? Oh, my Lord. She's just one of those really driven people that's always stayed like out in the forefront, trying to serve the community the best she can, and families and people who struggle with mental health and SUD. And it's an honor to have her here. Thank you for saying yes. And
of course.
So welcome to Recovery Centered.
Thank you for having me. Honored to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. We're honored to have you. Always love a good conversation with good people. This is very.
We've had some good people on here lately. I've been watching the replays. Yeah.
Have you?
It's a good lineup. Good series of lineups you've had.
Yeah, it's important to me. It's important to us. You know, our community's really struggling out there, as you know. So as somebody that's been working with the mental health, trauma, families, this space, what's your greatest, like, what's your greatest hurdle? What would you say, you know, you're seeing a lot of more than ever?
Well, since I pivoted to focusing on working only basically with parents who have adult kids with addiction issues, it's unfortunate, like, it's confirmed a lot of, what was the word you just used? What's the biggest?
You know, like, what would you say is one of the biggest things that you're dealing with that, like, you've seen? Yeah, barriers increase, you know,
yeah,
certain things, or, you know, is fentanyl starting to cut back a little bit and now they're going into psychedelics? I don't know, just your biggest.
Yeah, it's, I would say two things,
yeah,
for me. And maybe this isn't new or different for anybody else, but for me, because I've pivoted from doing mostly individual therapy with people in early or sustained recovery to, I gotta stop touching this thing, to working with their parents, basically, is a couple of things. One is getting every single day reminded of how many dangerous, infuriating myths there are out there about this disease that are handcuffing so many parents from saving their kids' lives.
Mm.
It's devastating to me. Because in this focus, in this niche now that I'm in, I'm talking to parents who are all across the country, all across the world, actually.
Yeah.
And they, as if it's a fact, and like they're educating me, mm-hmm, are telling me, basically, I'm wasting my time trying to help parents, because until an addict or alcoholic spontaneously decides that they're ready to get well, everyone else is wasting time and just basically trying to make money off of the whole thing. And, you know, basically, they know for sure as parents, they're powerless. They've been taught it. It's true. Nothing they can do. They're just basically waiting, you know, for some horrible thing to happen to their kids and focusing on prayer in the meantime. And it's like, I'm all about prayer. Don't get me wrong, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's like there's so many things that you could be doing that you're missing, you know? And it's like, not just they don't have the like the education and the support to know, but they're like really close. Some of them don't even want to hear it. Like, it's like almost insulting. Like, what? That's not true. Like, I don't have that power.
Like, do you get the don't you know who I am kind of syndrome? Do you get that a lot, you mean, like? Or is it just like the old classic denial, not my kid?
It's more like classic, like, well, I guess classic. like, you don't understand, like, they're telling, not in a rude way, I don't mean yeah. like that, but yeah. in a defensive way, like, you must not understand addiction because
yeah.
you're telling me that I can influence my child to make better decisions so that they get sober faster, that I can compel them to get healthy.
100%.
And that's not true. And I'm like, it's really just, of course, I can have that conversation yeah. as many times as I have yeah. to, because like you said, you're just after that one person,
one
right?
person, yep.
But it's just, it's exhausting to fight so many myths and so much misinformation about the disease.
How do you think that all comes up? Like, or is that in their own sickness too? Like, you know, because I think, tell me if I'm wrong, you know, the family system, because it's not a spectator sport, right? Everybody gets to play. The family system, the homeostasis, everybody gets sick in their own way when addiction's, you know, in the forefront, right? Or the main player, right? Yeah. Everybody around it gets addicted to the addiction.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Yeah.
But does that, because of like certain people or parents programming from their past too? Like, I'm not, I never shame a parent. You know, I'm a counselor. I'm not I'm not a therapist. You know, and I think it's really inappropriate, you know, to shame a parent.
Of course.
It's very disrespectful. It's just uncalled for, right? Because, you know, a lot of people don't like their parents because they're, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, it's not, you know, it's not their fault, right? They're programmed to be something they're not. They've been programmed, like, they're working on or operating on what was given them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you're operating on what was given you.
Yeah.
So...
And they're probably one of your best chances of surviving, honestly. If we can get them educated, get them engaged, supporting you in the right way that's, you know, compassionate and...
No.
Yeah, then...
Like no means no kind of stuff, right?
Right.
You know, like, I can't help what you're doing. Will I help you? Of course, to a certain extent, but... Right. I can't choose how I respond to it kind of thing, right? But I need help because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yep.
Right? It's not like when your kid's born, like the doctor opens a book and, oh, hey, by the way, you know, when your son or daughter reaches 21, just go to page 101 and it's right there, you know.
No, it's so hard. Even parents who are who are clinicians, who are nurses, who are in recovery, all of this, there's so many blind spots. Even if you understand it, you know, you have the education. Still, is there anything more emotional than your child might die from this disease? Now step up and take the lead in saving them. Like, how are you supposed to think straight, see that straight without tons of support? And it's just not there. I mean, it's there, but it's not there enough.
It's kind of like, it always makes me think, like, listening to you, you know, I still do facilitate a few groups a week and still, you know, I'm also in my own personal recovery. So I still sponsor men and I always try to like take advantage of the opportunity when I have it, you know, like it's not about intellect. Like there's so many people try to outsmart it. I already know that, you know, don't tell me what, you know, right. That ego. It's not about intellect because, you know, everybody's got insight. Everybody's got like that creative intelligence and it's not about willpower, especially for the addict. But for the parent, too. Like, we'll never do that again. 1 week later, they're doing it again.
100%.
Right?
100%. 1,000%.
And then the alky, I don't know, has a concert. Oh, I'll never do it. And then another week, they're back at it again.
Absolutely.
I always try to teach people, for me anyway, a recovery or the secret sauce or one of the main ingredients for recovery is, like, willingness.
Absolutely. What's been so... heartbreaking and energizing for me at the same time, since I'm focusing on working with parents, is that there are so many more parents who are willing than parents who have access to the support that they need. Mm. You know, it's like if you have a, you know, addict, alcoholic, they're willing. It's not that hard to find an AA meeting. Yeah. Not like everyone's created equally. I mean, you can go to, you know, you can go to some programs that are not great, and some of them are phenomenal, and same thing with meetings and sponsors and all that stuff.
Perfect. Yep.
But there's a lot out there. There's a lot of options. And with parents, for parents, I should say, besides Al-Anon meetings, which are great.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, individual there's not they have the willingness. But they're lost.
Mm.
and they don't have a person or a program or a resource that's widely known, right? Unless they get lucky, right? And like their son ends up at Beachway and they meet Dina and they have a phenomenal experience with family counseling and they get all these referrals from somebody who's really good and knows what she's doing. And now they're off to the races and they can stay well and get better and better. That's not the norm. The norm is their kid goes to treatment somewhere, if anywhere. Right. And like, there's really no, I'm gonna say no, I know that's dramatic, but basically no support for them as parents. If anything, a lot of them are told, stay out of it. You're being codependent. This is their recovery, you know, back off kind of thing, which is so upsetting to me. Like, you're pushing away your greatest asset and, you know, putting them on the sideline. You got to put, they're the MVP, put them in the game, like let them do their work, you know? And so unless, like I said, they get lucky and they come across some family friend or some therapist at a treatment program or maybe someone, some allopal or something. They're willing, but so what are they supposed to do? And they're getting so much misinformation that their willingness is being channeled in these really unhelpful ways. I'm willing, so what I'm being taught is I just have to let them hit bottom, detach. So I'm going to do that because I'm willing. And they don't, how are they supposed to know any better? They think they're doing the right thing. Or I'm willing, so I'm going to do X, Y, Z thing that's not helpful.
You know what amazes me? Like, you know, we're in the, I think, we're like in the worst epidemic we've ever been in. So, like, obviously so many things aren't working. But what always kind of intrigues me, I don't know about fascinates me, but intrigues me is like, you know, you have a toothache, you go to the dentist. You have a son or a daughter that's struggling with addiction or their mental health, and people just go,
I know.
Like,
we have no research on this. Like, this is a new thing.
Like,
I don't know. Maybe try the dermatologist. Like,
Or you have a skin issue, you go to the dermatologist. Like, you don't go to Home Depot for ice cream.
Right.
I go to an ice cream shop. My kid's doing drugs, or they're not doing well, or they have anger issues, or they're depressed, or they're eating disorder. They have an eating disorder. They're cutting, and people are, oh my God, I just don't know what to do.
I know.
You know, and they
that's the thing.
And then I think in that I don't know what to do part, they get just as sick, if not sicker. Do you find a lot of parents that have children already come from that background?
Yeah, of addiction, you mean?
Yeah. So, like, they don't, they may not use, but they're like a para alcoholic, right? They got like all the isms, the behaviors of an alcoholic because mom was or dad was. And
And they've learned that, you know, they've internalized a lot of the distortions about the disease from their upbringing. And then it's more further reinforced by, you know, our society. They're in these group chats or whatever, and people are, you know, just repeating a lot of the myths, and then they go for help, and their kids go for help, and they're given mixed messages even there. And I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to who are like, wait, you're telling me, okay, so you're a licensed clinical social worker, you specialize, whatever, right? You know, I get it, but my therapist, who also specializes in addiction, or my kid's therapist, who's in a treatment program right now, and I'm talking to this, they're telling me there's nothing I can do, there's nothing I should do, and they have to be ready and they have to want it, and I should just let them keep living in my house, keep eating my food, keep driving my car, because they have to have consequences, so I should keep doing that. And then eventually they're going to crash a car, get arrested, blah, 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 whatever. And then they're going to get better. And that's what I should be doing. You're telling me that's wrong? Like,
if they're lucky, they'll get arrested.
Of course.
Oh,
of
my
course.
Lord.
But I feel so bad for these. They think that they are. They are listening to recommendations, but they are bad recommendations. Yeah. They are dangerous recommendations. And it's not like one or two. It's like,
that amazes me how much of that is out there, too. It's kind of like you went, excuse me. When you were talking about the 12 steps, you know, like some of those sponsors, like a lot of these people are killing people.
I know.
you know, with the advice that they're doing. That's not the advice is one thing, but the program, say for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? The program is in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep.
And I go to some of these meetings and I'm like,
yep.
I try everything not to get up and leave, but then I have to say, all right, Timmy, why are you responding the way you respond? And then I regroup.
It's for a good reason though, right? You're feeling protective over people.
Correct. But it's like, it makes me more convicted to be in a meeting that a lot of this stuff is going on. Not that I'm just Tim, but I'm a big book guy.
Yeah.
And when I don't hear something that's not in the literature, I think it's my duty, because of the consequences of alcoholism, to say what's in the literature,
right?
Not what's coming out of my opinion.
Right.
And I guess it's kind of like the same way with a lot of therapists too, right? I hear all this stuff and it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
That and the other thing that makes me think about is this. I was in a session with a mom last week and she's like, you're telling me this, it makes sense, but my son's sponsor is telling him this. And this is like, you should totally go home for Christmas and you should totally make it like a whole long trip and do all your amends there and blah, 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 whatever. This kid's 5 weeks sober.
Oof.
And she's like, but I don't understand. He's, you told me, which I did, like, your son needs to get a sponsor. He needs to work the steps. He did it. He has a sponsor. He's working the steps. This is what his sponsor is telling him. I'm supposed to now set a boundary and not support that, even though his sponsor said. And it's like, this is just one obstacle after another for these parents.
That's
like,
what
they cannot get a break. Like, just when they think they're on track, it's like, here's this other challenge from left field you're now, here we go. You're second guessing yourself. You're confused. You're back to square one. None of it makes sense anymore. You're about to unconsciously, unintentionally undermine your kid's recovery now for this new reason that we weren't even... wasn't even on the radar last week.
Yeah.
Now we got this knucklehead confusing you. It's like nonstop. It's so hard for them.
Yeah, and it makes me go right back to what I was saying 5 minutes ago. Like, where's that in the book?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
If you ask me for my opinion, I'll give it to you. But it's your due process, right? It's your due process, not mine. Who am I to deny you of your due process, right? My job, my only job, is to take you through the steps. Anything outside of the steps has nothing to do with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking me my opinion. And my opinion, for me, I'm just going to give you my lived experience.
Right, exactly.
That's all.
Exactly. That's how it works.
So you made me think about, when you're talking about this guy.
Yeah.
18 and a half years ago, and I was relieved because I worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, not the opinion of others.
Right.
I worked the program out. It was the only thing that ever worked. And I'm very grateful for that. And that's why I still give back to AA. I'm not trying to disrespect anybody or make anybody pissed, but you know, I'm not an AA thief. And this guy told me a couple months in, he's like, just blah, blah. He just really got into he laid it on me. And then the last thing he said is, you can always fly back. Because I'm from Jersey. I was born in Brooklyn. I'm from Jersey.
Okay, got it.
The only thing, you know what I mean? He's like, you could, I don't know what it was, Jessica. That in that moment just went, shoop, boom. I've been flying back ever since. This is what I want you to do. And that was the program. Because I was, you know, a couple months in, my wife divorced me. I signed my house over. And then the state took my kids away from me.
Wow.
So I was really broken. I was whining every time I got with him. I hated him, actually, in the beginning, because I thought he knew everything. He didn't know anything. He just knew a way out. But I took it, obviously. Who's this guy? And he ended up being my sponsor.
Yeah.
But he just, after a couple months, he's like, Timmy, I'm getting so tired of all this stuff. When are you going to, I need you just to be quiet because you can always fly back. Just one of those moments. Like, it was that's why we do the podcast. That's why I love this podcast. I'm always after that one guy. I just happened to be that one guy that day that heard him.
Yep.
And I've been flying back ever since. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you must really have your work cut out for you because you're you're in that space. You got sponsors, those AA people.
Well, it's the parents have they can only learn so much. You know what I mean? Like now you have to learn about principles over personalities, and that's not all sponsors are made. Like they have their lives, they have other kids, they have jobs, they have their own health, they have, and their priority is supporting their kid, but they can't learn everything about how dual diagnosis, right? We're not just talking about addiction in most cases. How dual diagnosis recovery works and what is appropriate for them and necessary for them to get involved with. And what are they supposed to stand back and let the professionals and let other people handle and all of that stuff. To learn that is like, you're not going to get that from Al-Anon. You're not going to get that from a book. Like it's just, it's too. And so I think that's a big part of why kind of to come full circle to your question a bit ago, like why, where these myths come from. And part of it is, their family of origin. Part of it is society, but part of it too is like, after a while, and you're putting your all into this, and it's like one setback after another, they get discouraged, they get defeated. Like, I this is too much for me. This disease is too, it's got too many, you know, it's too powerful. Like, I don't know what to do.
And if somebody wanted to listen to my opinion today or my advice for any parent, I would strongly suggest you get a qualified clinician or, you know, therapist like Jessica, or she mentioned Dina, because there's not that emotion. Not only do you have very clever, Jessica, Dina, you know, being women, not only are you dealing with clever women, you're dealing with very educated women that have been in the field a really long time, because it's not an easy space to be in.
Yeah.
And I've been 18 and a half. I see so many people, even therapists. It's very difficult because we always see, we're kind of like first responders. We're always dealing with people at their worst. But the therapists that I know, especially the ones that work with the families, like, you know, you and Dina, you're an outside identity, you know, you're an outside corporation kind of, so you don't have that emotional attachment, the memories, all the manipulation by your addict daughter or son or husband or what, you know, all that chaos and all that manipulation and all that distortion. You guys are highly qualified outside people, and it's really easy for you. Well, I shouldn't say that, but it's easier for outside people to separate.
Totally.
All the mess, like, okay, this is over, right? Like,
how could it not be?
Huh?
How could it not be?
Right?
Yeah. I can't imagine being in it. Oof. If it was me, I would hire a Dina if it was me. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't see it. I can't imagine. It's too scary.
I like that. After that 5-minute rant I just went on, that's what it boils down to. You can't see it.
I'd be way too scared, way too overwhelmed, so heartbroken. Like, I don't think I couldn't see it.
Do you have like a certain hurdle, like, or do you know it's coming even before it's discovered? Like, is there any certain sign or red flag, you know, that you find in a lot of family systems, parents, you know, that are dealing with kids? Is there a certain, you know, I just got off a 2-month stint with the last family. Here comes another one again. Is there a certain,
like,
thing?
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
I
feel like the answer is yes, but I'm not 100,000% sure what the answer is. So tell me an example, second.
A lot of parents are, I don't know about defiant, but, you know, they can kind of get a little standoffish too. Who does she think she is? Maybe there's another way to explain that.
You might have
seen that with other people you've worked with, but that's not with us. But meanwhile, it really is. Yeah. Do people take it personally because, like, then they feel like they're being judged because you're judging, like, their parenting skills? Or is there any, like...
Yeah, great. No, those are great questions. Thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, all the above sometimes, but I don't usually get... this is a refreshing difference as compared with dealing with their kids, so to speak, is I don't usually get directly challenged. Like, you don't know what you're talking... You know what I mean? You know how, like, working in treatment, like... It's every day. Someone's like, you don't know what you're talking. You don't know me. I don't have a problem. I shouldn't be here. You know, all that stuff. I mean, it's good and bad because the parents still have that mentality, but they're more underground about it. They're not as, you know, overt
about
it.
So they're just as scared to change like most people are then.
Scared, you said?
Yeah, like scared of change.
Yeah.
And you're the scared of the truth. And you're the change maker.
Scared of the really, a lot of it comes down to, is this really happening right now? You know, as much as they know it's happening. But
I get it.
They have this disease and it's that serious.
Yeah, I get that.
And the stakes are that high. And I have that much influence. Like, I could really make it or break it. Holy smokes. Like, it's a gift and a curse. You know, to have that kind of responsibility, because they're used to being told, you're powerless, you're powerless, you're powerless, you're powerless. And
God, just blows me away.
That's true, but it's not black or white, obviously.
Yeah.
And when they start to learn how much they can really influence and control, it's so empowering and also very scary at the same time.
So if you want somebody else to change, you have to be willing to change yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you too, like I would say to somebody to ask me to sponsor them, it's cliche and it's very basic, but sometimes we have to get back to the basics, you know? What are you willing to do?
Yep, yep.
And I think that's probably the same thing with parents. They want their kids to change. They're trying to change them, taking control. Nothing's working. They're going bonkers.
Yep. Trying everything.
And are you, but you know, are they willing to change too? And change scares people.
Oh, gosh. Especially when there's this much pressure. I mean, I'm working with a couple right now who the father, he couldn't love his son anymore, right? I mean, just loves his son and feels so much pressure when I give him guidance. Like, I need you to go to your son and I need you to have this conversation with him. And this is exactly what I need you to tell him. You put it in your own words, but kind of don't actually. Just kind of just use these words, actually. And because this is how he needs to hear it. Used to talking to him in a way that's very, you know, you're guiding him, you're an authority, he needs you to get vulnerable with him, you know, he needs you to get soft with him, and this is what I need you to tell him. And this guy would, like, walk on coal, would die for his son, in a heartbeat. But can he have a...
Excuse me.
But can he have a soft, vulnerable, heart-to-heart, you know, conversation with his adult son? He's like, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can do that.
You know, they probably never had, right?
Like, never had, and also it feels wrong. It doesn't feel right. So I'm like, he's willing. So we work together and kind of like role play. His wife's there, and she's like, "You can do it. I know you can do it. He wants you to do it. I'm telling you, this has been a long time coming," and kind of like, pep him up, cheerlead him. You can do this. And, you know, he does it, and it's groundbreaking, you know, of course, because you can say something to somebody 100 different ways. You say it to them one different way, the way they need to hear it, and it resonates. And all the walls crumble. And the tears flow. And it's like, wow, you do love me. I do trust you. What should I do? Help me.
I think most people have those moments, you know what I mean? Like, it's exactly what they needed to hear.
Yeah.
Even though you said, like, they've heard it 100 times, but that's that one time that just...
Yeah. Sometimes parents need help to kind of manufacture that moment for their kids.
Yeah.
And it's doable. And the ones that are willing, they're so brave. I'm so blessed to have met so many parents over the last couple of years who are all in. Like, I'll do it. I mean, they're scared, you know, and they're inexperienced, but they're willing, and like,
it must bring out that drive in you too, though. Like that, you know, I don't know. I think humans, like, we're all, you know, we're explorers, we're seekers, we're adventurers, like, we're go-getters, like, you know, and then when you get that parent or parents, that whatever you tell us, it's like, just probably revs you up too. Probably like,
right? You know why? Like, all because of the same fight you're fighting, right, with your feet, with your blisters and your plantar fasciitis. It's like, we're stomping this thing out.
Yeah, man.
Like, I'm fired up. Yeah. You're going to set that boundary. You're going to have that heart to heart. You're going to do that thing that's going to be like a blow to the addiction. Like, I'm fired up. Let's do it. Let's do it again. Like, knock this thing out.
So funny. Like, I think it's so simple. Sometimes it's elusive.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like nobody, like, okay, I got a person doing meth, fentanyl. They've been doing it for 20 years, in and out of incarceration, blah, blah, blah. They could have been so much. And then somebody tells me, you got to keep hitting them with the truth because the truth weakens it. Huh? What?
It's not funny, actually.
But why? Like, that's the spaces I always try to get in with people. Because I have no rhyme or reason. I can't put it on a dry board. I can't give it to you on a worksheet. Like, it's just something about the truth. Like, why is it such a wonderful thing? But at the same time, something so wonderful and something so powerful, people hate.
Yeah.
Like, that's it's kind of like that. I don't know. Some things are, I guess, beyond knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. Like, I always found that kind of fascinating. You're like, why is the truth always delivers those fatal blows to dysfunction, mm-hmm. alcoholism, addiction, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. That's why I made that training, that strategic parenting training. I've never done this before, but I'm like, I'm going to make some slides. I'm going to make a slideshow. Like, I'm back in college or high school or something.
Yeah.
I do these trainings all the time, but I never do them with slides. I just riff, like, you know, and so I'm like, I need to do one with the truth, the facts.
Yeah.
Because in just one, you know, conversation,
yep.
parents can learn so much truth.
Mm.
That is the foundation, right, of the framework that they need to apply to helping their kids.
And most of us know it.
So I'm like there with like the statistics and the charts. And like, that's not me usually. But it's like you said, like so many people are averse to or don't have access to. Just the basics. Let's talk about the basics. Here's the facts. It is a brain disease. This is what works. These are the things that you would think matter. But they don't matter. It actually doesn't matter if this person wants this. It doesn't really matter if they say it's their last time, if they promise. These are the things that don't matter. These are the things that make recovery stick and stay and last. And these are the things that, you know, you get like, we have this information. This is not guesswork. We didn't just figure this out yesterday. Everyone should have the basic facts of what this thing is and how it works. Like,
Yeah, it's funny.
It shouldn't be a mystery.
Yeah, but the basics, like, it's funny you just brought up the brain disorder because I was on the phone actually this morning with somebody and they're like, I just can't get there yet. Because I told him, look, you know, he's like, it's just a wimpy thing to do or something, you know, but I can't stop drinking. I said, there's nothing wimpy about it. I said, it's not a moral issue.
Right.
You know, this is a very serious health condition. If you were allergic to peanuts, would you go to Publix and shoplift a bottle of peanuts and chug it, the whole thing down the parking lot? Like, no, because you can die from that. But intellectually, you know, we look at it like that. But I don't think addiction is an intellectual process to a certain extent because you know everything about what's going to happen if you use. And physically, if you want to do intellect, like physically, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of allergies and shellfish and peanuts and, I don't know, bee stings.
Pollen,
bee stings. You know, like somebody with a shellfish allergy, it's not like they talk their friend into going to Red Lobster with them, you know, and say, yo, when my pipes start closing up, hit me with my EpiPen. Or like somebody walks by, if they're allergic to shellfish, they see a lobster. It's not like they have to go to a Lobster Anonymous meeting or something.
Because shellfishism isn't a brain disease.
Yeah.
So we can control our behavior with common sense and logic. But that's not the case.
And a guy said, I just can't get there. I said, well, hopefully you do one day. It's not a moral issue. It's a very serious condition. You would treat yourself about all those other conditions. You just wouldn't do it.
This is a person who has an addiction. This is an alcohol. Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes what I've found too is working with parents, when they can get there, their kids, and this isn't just parents, I would say loved ones, have this kind of unspoken permission to get there themselves. Yeah. Like this guy, like I don't know anything about him, obviously, but as an example, like maybe he has a loved one who also is judgmental about addiction, and it's a moral issue, or it's a willpower thing, and what's wrong with you, and shaming and criticizing, and just doesn't get it. So that's how he sees himself, and it can be just a life-changing moment when a person's like, this guy's, I don't know, making this up again, I don't know who he is, but his wife or his mom or his sister or whatever, or his daughter is like, "Dad, what? It's a brain disease. It's okay. It's not your fault, but you got to treat it." But it's, if you don't treat it, it's going to keep happening because it's a disease.
It's the stigma.
You know, and having that permission to like, okay, people who know me, people who love me, they get it. They know that I would never choose to hurt people I love, to do all this stuff. Yeah. So I can ease up on myself and maybe consider that this isn't me being a bad guy.
I mean, I get it to a certain extent. You know, it creates unfortunate situations other like than it, you know, than other illnesses, you know what I mean? And those kinds of things. So I can understand it to a certain extent. You know, you creep, you jerk, you don't deserve to be a father, you're a bum, or you're a terrible mom, you're drunk all day. Like, I get all that. But if we get rid of all that, just boil it down to, it's like any other illness, right? Except this illness is, I don't like how I feel. Starts like that. For me, it always started, I just didn't like how I felt. And I didn't eat my feelings. I didn't, like, obsessively do, I don't know, sports or marathons or sex or just drank a lot of booze. Because it did something for me, you know. I didn't never like the taste. Like, I know, oh, wow. I just like the effects that it produced. You know what I mean? It changed my whole world, my whole perception of things. And even though that was a big illusion too, but at that time, it was my reality. Like, it was real to me. Like,
Yeah, that's how much pain you're in.
Oh,
and that's how much relief you need.
Oh, ridiculous.
And it's just, it's.
But people like you, that sponsor I couldn't stand initially. Yeah. You know, you guys empower me to see that I'll never get rid of that. It's part of my wiring. It's part of my DNA. I'm not a doctor or whatever. Biology, you know, whatever you want to attach it to, my genetic coding. Physically, if it goes in, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
But my gift that so many, you know, people taught me is I get to change my thinking because it's my thinking that kept putting it in.
Yep.
And that's pretty cool. I would love to go down to the Children's Hospital with you and a couple of my guys and, you know, talk to the parents that just got the letter. You know, there's not much more we can do. Get your ducks in a row. And here I am, this guy in recovery. Oh, hey, I have a fatal progressive illness too, but I found a way out. And I just had to change my thinking, and I'll show your daughter if she wants, you know, every day just to change her. And then you'll see her hair will start growing back, and maybe you'll see her jumping on the bed with the nurses playing video games. But she has to do it every day. You know, what would those poor people do with something like that, you know? And that's always another mission I'm on. Like, I don't know, I just feel so responsible because I heard that one thing that one day, and like, how do I, you know, how do I reach these people that have a fatal progressive illness?
And it's treatable.
That's the thing. Like, how many other fatal progressive illnesses do you know that are treatable? Like,
and it's simple. It's not easy. It's not easy.
No, it's a different kind of hard.
It's not easy.
It's like a different.
It's not complicated.
No. But at the same time, I'm battling like this thing that tells me I don't have a problem.
It's very difficult.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
Vegas has nothing on alcoholism or mental health drug. Nothing.
But for outsiders to observe the way that people behave when they're in active addiction or, you know, and judge or criticize or label, like, you're this, you're that. I have so much to think about you. Like, you are a good man. And for you to be at a point where in your life, back, I guess, 19 years ago.
The
way that you were living was the best you could do at that time.
Correct.
And people are on top of how much shame and pain you're bringing upon yourself. People are judging, criticizing, labeling, like, help him, you know? And that's how I feel about, obviously, and I know you do too,
yeah.
everyone out there suffering who is, instead of getting a hand, you know, like, come on, there's a solution, are getting like either this best case scenario or like a middle finger or a shove or it's like,
yeah, it's really sad
that these, that you, you're going to choose, if you have a choice, you're going to choose to hurt the, to hurt everyone who you love, who loves you, to be at that bot where you're meeting this, you know, meeting up with this, this guy you don't even know, probably don't even like, the sponsor.
Yeah.
And is like telling you he's sick of hearing about it. Yeah. Like, that's the life you want. Obviously, you didn't want that.
Yeah.
But no, there was no other solution available to you at the time. So let's make more solutions available.
Just working on what I had.
Outcomes like this. Like,
yeah, just working on with what I had, you know? I mean, I had great copying skills. I could go cop anywhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I had no coping skills.
Right, right.
I couldn't cope, man. When life...
If I said to you, you can have phenomenal coping skills or phenomenal coping skills today, what would you choose?
Oh, coping.
Right?
100%.
20 years ago, what would you choose?
Oh, coping.
Okay. What is that? That answer, that says everything, right?
Yeah.
It's a brain disease. Like, your brain heals.
Yeah.
What do you know? You can think more healthy and clear again. What do you know? That's why, like, all these parents out there that are like, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. You're the only ones in a lot of cases who can do something.
Yeah.
They're brain damaged. Like, help them, you know?
It's unbelievable. But you know, people like me, I hear it a lot. You know, we try to explain to others why we're doing what we're doing, and nobody can ever understand. And so we just get more frustrated, you know. But in sobriety, I try to teach people, you know, it's just a matter of having conversation, right? Let them, you know, it's their due process, not mine.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, man, I want you to think about this.
Yeah.
How can you understand something you've never experienced?
Yeah.
And then attach all the crazy behaviors that come along with mental health and addiction. How do you expect people to respond?
Yeah, exactly. What do you expect? Exactly.
What do you expect? So that hits a lot of people too. So you've been in the space, what, 15 years now? Therapist?
15, almost.
Therapist?
Yeah.
Clinical director?
Mm-hmm.
And then you went into the niche.
Yeah, parent coaching.
Parent coaching. How long now?
A few years.
A few years now.
Been doing it exclusively for... Little over a year. It's like all I'm doing.
But. So you're very seasoned, clever, witty. If you're dealing with mental health and addicts, you have to be kind of witty, just as witty as them sometimes. Yeah, for sure.
You have to be. I think you have to have a sense of humor too.
100%. Humor's great, man. It's a wonderful. I think it's a wonderful tool.
Yeah.
You know, because I think because humor's like. Naturally inherited in us, you know, and when addiction or mental health or this dysfunction keeps taking away all my natural, I just walk around like that, you know, people, they look haunted, you know,
something like that.
So
lighten up sometimes, you know, can't all be.
Is there any reason what got you into the parent lane, you know, just the way it is, kind of just where it went?
I think it goes back to what got me into this field in the first place, because I was blessed to be taught from the very beginning about the importance of family work, family systems, parenting, and you know, I don't even know. Do you know, like, how many treatment centers are there in South Florida? Like, ballpark. I wouldn't even know how to.
The amount of licenses, I think, is over 1,000, 1,300 or something. Yeah. I think that's just Palm Beach County, too, to be honest.
Actually?
I think so. It's crazy.
I mean, I guess it surprises me, but also it doesn't. Needless to say, whether it's 1,000 or 800, whatever, it's
crazy.
Too many.
Yeah,
it's too crazy. Many is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always say blessed because I could have ended up as a newcomer to the field. I'm not going to obviously name any names, but I could have ended up in some pretty poor quality places, and then, you know, been pretty confused and taught all the wrong ways, but I was blessed to be introduced to this field in a place that was, that taught me all the right things for the most part.
Nice.
And ever since then,
it's been running.
I've been, I've been focusing on the families ever since and just waiting. Yeah. Maybe not waiting, but, or I didn't realize I was waiting, but it's all kind of built up to this, I guess.
Yeah, and you really excel. I mean, to be a clinical director, that's very, very important job. You know, a lot of commitment, a lot of demand, and
yeah,
it's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
My hat's off to you.
Yeah.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can visit my website. I always like when people ask me that, I'm like, how many times do I spell my name and like enunciate it? Because people, it's not like a common name or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the easiest way is through my website, because there are a lot of different ways that I kind of show up out there. But you can find them all.
JessicaPond.com.
It's Jessica Pond Coaching, which is Jessica, J-E-S-S-I-C-A, Pond. Do you know how to spell it?
P-O-N-N.
Yeah. A lot of people who know me for a long time don't. They butcher it.
Yeah, but what a great, is it .com? No, coaching.
Yeah, Jessica Pond Coaching.
You may want.
.com.
You may want to check if the website's available.
It's not.
It's got a nice flow to it.
JessicaPond.com?
Yeah.
I tried.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I did. I tried.
It almost sounds like one of those law.
Because it kind of rhymes. Like Pond Comp. Yeah.
So it's Jessica Pond, P-O-N-N, coaching.
Yeah.
Dot anything or?
Dot com. Dot com.
There's that com again.
Yeah. I got links on there to my Facebook group that I have for parents. Okay. I post all kinds of that training I was talking about, all kinds of trainings,
awesome.
Downloadable tools that I make and I put out there. I'm always like, okay, they need to learn about this. Like I just did a training on the 12 steps.
Oh, nice.
Because of that mom I was talking to.
Yeah. Like, you got to make it sit.
Do a little something for them. Let them like understand where their kids are coming from and all that. So throw that in the Facebook group.
Yeah.
Parents should join them. Yeah. Join
the group. You can tell that next mom. I got just the file for you. Expect Seriously? An email from me. That's great. Like I'm telling you, it's great. We get so removed from the basics. It's crazy. You can take the an athlete getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars. They get into a slump. The old coach comes walking out. Mm-hmm. What the hell is going on? Coach, we tried everything.
Yeah.
Have anybody taken back to the basics?
Yep.
Huh?
Get on that free throw line.
Get them back to the basics, man.
Yep. Layup drills.
For real.
Yeah.
Any last words? Anything you want to say? You know?
Like, yeah, I don't. Let's just keep talking.
Well, I am on a schedule and.
Don't look at your watch, though.
I'm not looking at it.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Can I ask a last question, though?
Yeah.
Like, how did you come to the the professional family that you're in right now? From, because I'm Jersey, 18 years, Florida, got it. I'm piecing it together. But then how did you get to all these great professionals who are around today? How did you get to the Beachway family, like the Dinas and the Carries, all that? Like,
That's a great question. You know, I'm always a believer. And, you know, another thing that I try to teach people is you attract what you know. So 18 and a half years ago, this fella that I was in the Marine Corps with, I met him at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. I got out a little before him. When he got out, he became a Newark police officer in New Jersey. It's like Afghanistan. Very bad. And after 6 years, the agency doctor put him on Klonopin. And within 1 year, he was to the needle. So when I reached out to him, he was in sobriety. He said, I got the place for you. And that's where he went. I showed up there homeless, though, on a scholarship. Started cleaning toilet bowls, picking up cigarette butts, garbage around the property, and just kind of And that's another a reason why I try to help people become their authentic self, you know, because when you're very authentic to yourself, it takes you places you wouldn't think you would ever go, you know. There's something about the human, just there's something about you. There's something about me and you listening, you know, there's just something about human beings. It's very intriguing, you know, it's just what we can do. And anyway, so, and yeah, just the people that I know, including you, are they're like me, like minded. And I was always this kind of guy, I was always good. You know, the drug separated me from my goodness and my authenticity. So when I got rid of the drugs, good people showed up, you know, and I just started learning, you know, I had teachers like you, Carrie. Carrie's incredible. Like
amazing.
I remember when she was a tech and she just went, pew! And what she's doing today, because we have another place up in New Jersey. She oversees the whole thing, Beachway here in Jersey. You know, there's over 100, you know, like 120 beds. And when you're that, when you're at that level, like, it takes a certain person clinically, because Beachway, and you can respect this, we're, it's clinical first. Clinical is the deciding entity on everything, even admissions. They trump admissions. So I love that about Beachway. Yeah. So, yeah, just great question. I've just met so many good people, had good sponsorship.
Like God put them in your path kind of thing?
100%. Yeah, because yes took me, I said no my whole life out of fear, you know?
Yeah.
And so as long as I kept making fear-based decisions, I just kept creating more fear. So I was like, maybe if I start saying yes within reason, I'll go more places.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I discovered in my experience. In, you know, yes has taken me more places than no ever will. So, yeah, that's always been my heart. I'm a server, man. You know, I that's the right thing for me to do. I serve people. Yeah. And for me, I'm a believer, so I serve God at the same time because he showed me a lot of mercy in the last 18 and a half compared to what I did. You know, when you don't like yourself, that means hurt people, you know, emotionally, all that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, my addiction destroyed my family. So, yeah.
He's put you in the path to...
Yeah, I serve a lot of people. Yeah. I serve. I have a charity too. I started 5 years ago. That serves a lot of people. Yeah. First responders, by the way, and it cost them nothing. You know, the other day,
it's incredible when you were telling me about it, I couldn't believe it.
The other day, the charity. I've been doing this 5 years. I've helped hundreds of people, and I've never met one. Excuse me. I've only met one.
Really?
Yeah, it happened to be in Broward, because it didn't start out like that. You know, it started out because it was the right thing to do. You know, more first responders. Statistically and nationally now died by suicide than they do in the line of duty. And I really struggled in Marine Corps with my mental health, and I didn't know how to communicate, you know, I spiraled. And I thought, boy, and here I go again, right? That if I could just help one person avoid that experience that I avoided,
right.
That I couldn't avoid, job well done, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, I'm paying... I said, we, not I'm paying, we, because I can't do it alone. I'm paying for a guy's deductibles for psychiatric observations and like visits, you know, like for medication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to know why they can't afford $35, but it was a first responder up in Orlando that reached out because she's a peer advocate. And that's what peers do for their people, right? Their brothers and sisters, they advocate. They heard about me. And she's like, I just can't fathom that this person can't get help for because of $35. Well, I heard about you. I got him.
What a blessing.
So it's
what a blessing. You get a call like that. That's just like that would make my year.
I was convicted from the first walk I ever did. First walk I ever did. I was at my second firehouse station. They showed me, they pray, you know, thank you for what you're doing. We lost, this is a, forgot his name. He was on the wall. They had a plaque. They lost him to suicide. So I've been convicted ever since. You know, last year I did 71 miles. The surge that it created, the talk, the conversations, the activity, the escorts from fire rescue or police, and getting down to Surfside where 98 people's lives were taken. Mm-hmm. The heroism and the brave those people were, that, you know, what they had to do was
jump in there.
And crazy. Yeah, just but a lot of them got really affected by it too. It's it's brutal.
Sure.
And then, you know, it changed my life. And then we have a hero's dinner. The next, when I'm done, we have a hero's dinner. And at the hero's dinner, it's all, you know, last year we sold out. We got to get bigger place. I bring advocates there, people in uniform preferably, that are advocating for mental health. And we need to do better. We need to change the culture instead of suck it up. Yeah. This is what you signed up for. And it was off the charts. A couple people in uniform, had somebody like you who speaks and deals with it and works with first responder.
This is why we vibe. I feel like you're a creator, you're a doer, like you make it
happen. I'm a ground pounder.
Yeah. And if I had more, this is a need, I'm going to make it. Yeah. If it exists, I'm going to make it. That's how I like.
And if I had more time, I'd take my shoes off so I could show you.
I saw the picture.
But then I don't want the studio.
I saw a picture of your toenails last night.
I don't want the studio's beautiful cameras.
I want your sympathy, but I do want your support.
I don't want your
Here's
sympathy.
My feet.
If I wanted that, then I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. You know what I mean? It's a lot of work. I got two full-time jobs, and they're both very critical, and they're both, you know, I've been given the responsibility of two tremendous resources. I think it's a responsibility of mine. You know, I'm starting to get a little choked up because it just is. There's a lot of people hurting, and they need people who have found a way out. I found a way out. I don't know how much money that's worth, but I don't think it's worth money. It's priceless.
Mm-hmm.
It's the greatest thing I ever succeeded at.
Yeah.
So I think it's just my duty to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to wrap that up now.
Now that we got a little tears.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to regroup. Thanks a lot. I mean, I went from the host to being a client.
It was not intentional.
No, it's just...
Try a little bit if you want to make it even.
It was just hashtag real shit. And that's what I love about the opportunity to do what I do and to do it with people that, you know, always show up. You know, we're doers, man. And that ain't bragging. That's just the way it is.
Yep.
You got people, you can take 100 people. You got 80% that do nothing. You got 10% that do something. Then you got the other 10% that do everything.
Hustle.
Just the way it is. So, Jessica Ponn Coaching, that's PONN .com.
That's right.
I'm Tim Roberto. Another pleasure hosting such a wonderful person who's really doing the deal and helping a lot of families that just don't know what the heck to do. And I get that. You know, it's not like you go to school for this until it actually shows up for your life and you need somebody to help you with this, because nothing operates like mental health and addiction. It's in a league by itself and we need help with it. I'm all over social media.
You are. I was looking at your page, like 8 posts a day. Like, I'm like, how does
that went
do
on
this?
A roll yesterday?
Phenomenal.
I was all jacked up.
Phenomenal.
All jacked up.
I could feel it though, the energy in the posts.
You can, like, right?
This guy's on fire.
Yeah, I was pumped.
Yeah.
My email's tim.r@beachway.com. And again, thank you, Jessica. And I really, really, really hope that we reach that one person. If you're that person, reach out to Jessica. You know how to get in touch with her, reach out to me. We're here for you. And if we can't help you, we've been around long enough, we can get you help. I guarantee that.
Yep.
So until next time, peace and love.